Okay, Place to Be Nation, welcome to the latest reaction show for the NXT TakeOver. And tonight, on the air with me, I have Chris Zellner from Exile on Bad Street and Between the Sheets, got Johnny Sauer from the Titans Wrestling, and our good buddy, the documentary filmmaker, Johnny P. Now, fellas, tonight the show opened up with Andrade Cien Almas versus Ty Dillinger. Zellner, do me a favor, man. For those of us who only watch the TakeOver shows, tell us a little bit about Andrade Cien Almas.
Well, of course, he's the former La Sombra in Mexico and, of course, in New Japan. As was the IWGP Intercontinental Champion there, beat Nakamura for the title a few years ago. Member of Los Ingobernables with Rush and La Máscara, and was one of the top guys there. He's a big-time star. Everybody knew that he was on the bigger and better things in the future, you know, the time came, because he was just that good. He's that young. He's only got about 27 years old, 28 in that area. So, yeah, he was a prodigy. He started out real young, was good at like 16. Just a fantastic performer, and the timing was right from the come up. So he dropped the mask last year to Rush, and no, to Atlanta, excuse me, at the Anniversario show, and then had a blow off with Rush at the end, so he could come over here. And he's been working house shows, dark matches, stuff like that, biding his time before it's time to come up. And yeah, they brought him up, had nice little video packages, you know, of him in the mask and then taking the mask off. And this is his first big match in NXT.
So what did you think about the match, buddy?
It was a good opener. It was a good way to showcase him. He didn't do everything he could do, which, you know, that's okay. This is his first match. Ty Dillinger, who is red hot with that crowd, he definitely performed as well. Looked real good as an opponent. Thought the match was perfectly fine. Really good at times. There's still some work to do in the overall presentation of Andrade's whole deal, gimmick, in, you know, working and all that stuff, because he's got to transition from the lucha style to a more traditional style, hybrid style. So, you know, once he gets more traction in that role, he's gonna be pretty big, I think. And Triple H seems to be really high on him. He thinks he's gonna be a big player in NXT. So they're behind him, which is a good sign. Okay. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, Dillinger. I saw someone on Twitter make a good analogy and said Dillinger is like NXT's Dolph Ziggler, but way better. And it's going like the way he would be as an opponent. And that's a good deal. And he's been there forever. So, yeah, he's a good hand to have in these type of matches. So, perfectly fine opener.
Okay, and Johnny, was there anything that stood out about this match to you? Johnny Sorrow.
Oh, yeah, well, as far as Ty goes, I mean, he's, like, I think the reason that the gimmick has gotten so over with that crowd is a lot of that crowd is probably hip to the fact that Dillinger is their guy who, when they want to put, like, when a guy's arriving and they want to introduce him to the style, they put him in there with Dillinger. When a guy's injured and they go there to recuperate, Dillinger's the guy who works them. He worked with Seth Rollins and stuff before he came back and everything. And most of that crowd is hip to that. So that gives him a lot of extra goodwill with that crowd. And you can see it. Like, I don't see him ever going up, you know. But he's like their gatekeeper guy who the crowd respects because they know about a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff. And I loved his Ming the Merciless 10 jacket. That was fantastic. And besides Almas figuring out the style and everything, I don't know how the fabulous ones with a feather look is the best ring entrance there when you've got No Way Jose there wearing the same pants. You know, maybe just drop that and just come out in your gear. And But as Chris was saying, those vignettes that they were showing to lead up to this were really cool, really good stuff. Like this, like, grainy Mexico footage behind him, and you don't see his face as the mask comes off. And you see his face, and then you go, oh, well, you know, that's... You say he was unmasked in Mexico. Well, that guy's got movie star good looks. I'm sure that's also part of why they... why they're kind of big on the guy, man. He just walked out of a fucking GQ catalog. As far as the match went, yeah, he's got... It's going to be some adaptations stuff, but the shot of the finisher, which was supposed to be like double knees, and the way it was shot, it just looked like cock and balls to the face. And I was like, eh. And that was the finisher. I'm sure if they shot it from a different angle, it would look far more devastating. But it was a fine little opener.
Okay, Johnny P., are you still with us?
Yeah. Hey, guys.
All right.
The opener. Well, First of all, Sorrow apparently has access to all my notes, right down to the gatekeeper. Yeah, I felt the same way about Ty Dillinger. Like, I felt like the arena itself looked at him as, like, their guy. So that helped. The only thing I can add, because Johnny really nailed it, was it reminded me of, like, what Tyler Breeze was for the last few big events for his run in NXT. Except I don't think... Ty Dillinger is going to make it up to the main roster. And in a weird, like, that might bum him out, but it's probably for the best that he has the role that he does. I did think it was interesting. I thought of you, Chris, right away. Did you catch the line where they said that he has extensive experience on the Mexican independence? Which made me think, I wonder what WWE thinks of CMLL, because I've never really thought about that relationship before, because they name drop New Japan, like, all the time now. But yeah, it was a solid opener. It wasn't too flashy. It's probably like what a lot of old school fans would want an opener to be in the modern age as far as putting together a card. So yeah, nothing wrong with it. Good job. I think it was cool that they did the smart thing where they realized he was a Mexican, he was a luchador who had somewhat of a small following in the United States as compared to like an indie superstar type. So they had him not only work house shows, but work in Florida a lot. So these people were fully familiar with him. So they brought him in kind of the right way. That's what I would say.
All right, cool. Well, I don't know. I know that they're really trying to find the next Rey Mysterio or to find the next Mexican star to feature. You know, they really botched Alberto Del Rio's re-entrance into the company. So hopefully, you know, I mean, this guy will work out.
And he's doing other work. I mean, he's heavily recruiting for them as well.
Oh, really?
I know Rush and Volador Jr. is two guys that he's really getting the ear of.
Okay, cool.
And really pushing them as well to WWE. So, yeah. He's doing more work than just in the ring.
So he's putting in, he's earning a paycheck, that's for sure. So,
oh, definitely. Oh,
that's good. Well, let's go move on to the next match, and this one's for the NXT Tag Team Championship, and it's the American Alpha versus the Revival, and this is a rematch from the last NXT Takeover, right? Like, I'm correct, right? I'm not imagining that, right?
Yeah.
Right, guys?
Yeah.
What was that rematch
from the last?
Yes.
Last one got a lot of big raves about how great it was, and that was an awesome card. So let's start with Johnny Sorrow, man. What'd you take away from the rematch here? But
I loved this. Just such a great babyface heel dynamic was going on here. That you almost don't see all that much. I mean, there was a clear hero villain thing going on. Like in a lot of the other matches, you can be like, well, I'm behind this one, but I'm behind this one. There's clear bad guy, good guy here. And the Revival, I read somewhere recently that someone asked about the Revival and said, they're now as good as people were saying they were 6 months ago. And you can see it. At every opportunity to cheat just a little, They do. And it just is so slick and smooth. You know, it's, they, when they even they don't have to cheat, they do. And fucking love it. And I marked out because I love the bad guys, and they won and got their titles back. And some of the choreographed type spots that sometimes can be a little too cute for their own sake, I thought these four guys pulled them off amazingly well, to where I was like totally into this and just having so much fun. This was a fun tag team match. And apparently Ron Howard was in ringside, if you saw the bald guy with the red hair. And I didn't take notes on this one. I just sat back and enjoyed the fuck out of it. Scott Dawson is a king among men. He's becoming more Arn than Arn. I love it.
Johnny P, did you feel the same way as Sorrow?
Sorry, yes, I looked mute button.
Hello? Johnny P.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Barely. Can you guys hear him?
Can you hear me?
Some, yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay. Yeah. So many notes that it reads like a book, and I don't even want to read it. I really liked this match, and I really liked the first match that we watched from Dallas. And I liked this one because the shine at the beginning was a lot longer than I thought, but it ended up proportionately being good. Which isn't to say that you have to have this, you know, there's not a mathematical formula, but I was like amazed at how fluid it was at the beginning. And then I thought it was like, well, here comes the reversal and the heel heat. It didn't come right away. And it didn't overstay its welcome. And I thought that was really cool, because it kind of, sometimes when you deviate from something, especially when you got a good tag team formula, you kind of risk that either consciously or subconsciously with fans. And I just thought everybody played their role so well. I love the hot tag to Jordan. Man, he has so much energy coming out there. They have all the things in place that I have like a micro criticism, which is, if the Revival could work the crowd just a little bit more, or if they had some sort of manager, because this whole thing feels so like the true modern example and update of like 80s NWA tag wrestling, that I just wish it kind of was like a Cornette out there, or a Heyman or something. So I thought it was great. I didn't expect the finish. The last 30 seconds were really well done. I liked the finish. Might have been my match of the night, honestly.
Yeah. And real quick before you go to Chris, Johnny, I was thinking the exact same thing. I was like, a manager. And yeah. Because Dawson is doing both roles. He's being the mouthy mouthpiece guy, as well as being in-ring talent.
Yeah, and that's hard. He's not quite dynamic. Well, it's weird, too, because I almost feel like he can't be what makes him good if he's also that role too much, if that makes any sense. Like, he can't kind of be like an Arn Anderson type and also be that big of a personality during a match, like in-ring. So I almost feel like they sort of need somebody there, but like I said, it's a micro-criticism, because this is a really good, I guess the feud's over, but it was a really good feud, and I liked the act.
All right,
I'm glad I showed Josh notes also.
Oh, sorry. Chris?
Yeah, this is the 2016 version of Rock and Roll versus Arn and Tully. I mean, it's that type of dynamic with, you know, Chad Gable being Ricky Eaton, of course, and, you know, Dash and Dawson being, you know, Arn and Tully, and Jason Jordan being the world's best Robert Gibson.
Yeah, wait. A tall, handsome, dynamic, muscular Robert Gibson who's black.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, the crowd was just so heavily in the alpha. And this is one of those matches where, you know, full sale crowds are normally, you know, they'll do the split chants and stuff like that. No, this was pretty much all alpha in this crowd, and they were all, all on them as usual. Gable and Jordan are so good together. It's amazing how good they are, especially, you know, considering Gable's experience level. You know, he's still just a little over a rookie. And Jordan's been there for, God, 4 or 5 years now. And he's, you know, finally, you know, coming into his own. He's going to be a megastar on his own. I know everybody, Gable gets all the love, but Jordan's going to be up there too. And I thought the finish was perfect. I know a lot of people thought that Alpha was going to retain, but with what's been going on NXT television lately, this, you know, they've been planting the seeds for Revival against Gargano and Ciampa, and that's obviously going to be the next program for the tag titles, I would think. So it made sense for the Revival to win the belts, and also there is a good chance that American Alpha may go to the main roster soon. That talk has been around, although what happened after the match was interesting. But real quick, talking about the match itself, yeah, the last 5 minutes was really strong. The stretch run, the finishes, God, the Chad Gable, man, the belly-to-belly suplex, my God. But yeah, just great work there. And in the end, of course, with the Altars of Pain coming out, making their debut to destroy American Alpha, then Precious Paul Ellering, of all people, showing up was just a wow. It's an amazing deal there. And interesting because NXT has interest in his daughter. So that's another little sub-story there. But
well, Chris.
Authors of Pain, yeah. It's interesting to see them up.
Who are they? Who are the Authors of Pain?
All right. Authors of Pain are, I got to get the names right, Sonny Dinsa and Gizm Samani. And, one of them must see. I'm trying to think. One of them was a Bellator fight. I think it was Dinsa fought in Bellator. And Samani was a heavyweight champion amateur wrestler in Canada. So, yeah, they've been in the Performance Center for a little while. And they've been working house shows. They worked at the April tapings in Orlando. And they got this big, you know, big guy look. I love what a lot of people were saying. They said, oh, it's D'Lo Brown's kids. Come out there to take a second.
I was like, it's Zambuya Express version 2.
But the thing about the thing that came out of that segment was, who were the full still chants chanting, who were you at? Was it Ellering or was it Authors of Pain? Because if it was Ellering, that's pretty sad.
I thought it was pretty clear it was Ellering, but maybe that's because I'm watching TV feeds. I don't know what they see and they don't, but they didn't chant that until Ellering was there, and that I actually had that in my notes. Like, that's interesting. I'm not as deep into that as, like, you guys would be. I wasn't a big LOD fan, but I knew exactly who that was right away. But, yeah, it made me feel very old that they chanted that.
Yeah, but when's the last time he was on television?
Exactly. Know? I mean, it's been a long time since he's been in a regular role on television. Like, a lot of people probably weren't even born. So
and apparently doing the Iditarod gives you eternal youth because...
Oh, he looks awesome.
Outside of a salt and pepper goatee, he hasn't aged. It's amazing.
Yeah, he looks awesome. And that's a guy who, with a team like that, that's a great touch. And you were mentioning about how the Revival needs a manager. Those type of guys need a manager. And Ellering, that's great that they brought him in to work with these guys.
Oh, that'd be great.
I guess they're going to feud with Alpha. They'll feud with Alpha and probably, you know, send them packing to the main roster when that time comes. So, yeah, that the whole segment served a couple of major purposes.
So the match was great, and we had like a really solid angle at the end to kind of kick off the next round, leading up to the next takeover. So, you know, booking is done simple but effective. Wrestling is so much better to watch, man. It just drives me nuts that people think booking is harder than it really is, you know?
So. You know what's funny? If this had been just 10 years earlier, that would have been the Hit Squad.
Yeah.
Those jokes are going around too. Somebody, oh, the hit squad shrunk.
they look like it. You guys are hitting them all because I looked at it and went, that almost looks like the hit squad, but it can't be. And my next thought was, wow, it's like weird, like D'Lo Brown mutations. And you guys got that.
Yeah, people thought they were Samoans. They're Middle Eastern.
That's awesome. All right, well, let's move on to the next match. Next, we had Shinsuke Nakamura versus Austin Aries. Okay, and I absolutely love that Sami Zayn match. I still like it more than the AJ Styles versus Roman Reigns matches, but, you know, whatever. That's an argument for another time. Most notably at the end of the year when we do Match of the Year Contender podcast. But, Johnny, I actually sat in a hotel room and watched the Nakamura versus Zayn match. And how do you think Nakamura looked on his second outing on a takeover?
Which Johnny?
I was only in a hotel room with one.
Oh, I didn't hear you say. No. I knew
whoa,
that.
Whoa. Really? How soon they forget? I got you.
You were in Johnny Sarwin hotel room was a ball gag.
Yeah, I got him roasted.
Well, Naylor was there for some of it. So.
Yeah, he was filming it.
No, I'm sorry, Will, because I was waiting for that setup, but I didn't hear you go, with you? So I just thought you just went, hey, I was just in a hotel room watching that match, and just went and just moved on. I thought the same thing, too. It's funny. I was thinking of the first match. I don't know that you can top that, but I don't know that you should always have to do something that well, if that makes any sense. I don't know if, like, anybody does any job where they have, like, this day where they're just, like, amazing at their job, and then the bar is now, like, be amazing every day to a point where everybody stops and says that was the greatest you could ever do. I thought this was really good. It wasn't that. It wasn't going to be that match, and I didn't think it could be. I thought it was really good. I thought Aries is getting his feet under him. He's absolutely moving towards being a heel, and I think he's more comfortable in that role, oddly enough. I think he's just naturally kind of arrogant and a little egotistical. And you saw signs of that during this match. I liked the work on the knee. I thought the second, not only the missile dive, but the missed dive was pretty nuts. As well as I thought that they were going to stop doing this whole, like, Death Valley drivers and all this stuff on the apron. I thought that was something that was a no-no. But the match was good. I don't have certain spots to it that I thought were like brilliance, but it felt really good and solid and built to something. But it wasn't next level, and that's okay.
Okay, cool. What about you, Zomer?
The crowd was phenomenal for the opening part. I mean, they are in love with Shinsuke Nakamura. I mean, it's amazing. The reaction that guy gets, and they were singing his theme throughout the match. The guy's full of charisma. One thing to notice is, you know, normally he wears a red armband. You know, he had a black armband tonight, and pretty sure that was for Ali, since he was a huge fan of Muhammad Ali. Of course, the Bombayé, now the Kinshasa is his finisher, so I'm pretty positive that's what that was about.
Chris,
so
it totally nice wasn't the crowd at one point was going, Shinsuke Bombayé, Shinsuke Bombayé.
Yeah. So that's a good touch there. The match itself was, I thought it was a really solid match. I saw where a lot of people were, they didn't like Aries's, the section he was in control in, and they thought that he was, you know, kind of boring. I thought it was solid. It wasn't flashy, but it did the job. One thing I will say, he came in with the taped ribs, and there wasn't a whole lot of focus on the ribs, which, you know, that's me watching old wrestling a lot and, you know, knowing that, okay, coming in with some type of, you know, tape on your body, that's going to be the focus of the match, well, which it wasn't, but that, you know, whatever, it's different now. The stuff towards the end, like the Death Valley drive on the apron was talked about. The tope that Aries missed to hit all railing, that could have been horrible. I mean, that was, he was going like a bullet and hit all metal. And luckily, he hit at the right spot where he didn't hurt himself severely. I mean, that was a dangerous spot. And the camera didn't catch it clean on the first shot. They did show the good version on replay. So there was that. Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, Aries kind of had to lose this match. He was kept strong. It took a top rope Kinshasa. Then, you know, of course, another Kinshasa to win. So it took a little bit, and he got a good bit of offense here. It's going to be interesting to see where they go with him. Nakamura, I got to believe he's going to be Joe's next opponent. So they definitely had the win. So, it's again, another match that served its purpose. The finish was right. So that's all you really want here. So kudos.
And Johnny Sorrow. Not the one who was in the hotel room with me, but you, Johnny Sorrow.
Real quick, though, it took me a second to realize they were doing Bumbaye, because for a second I thought they were going Kumate, like from Bloodsport. But really, I'm the only one who's ever seen fucking Bloodsport.
Yeah, no, I just said, what the fuck? Like,
you know, Kumate. Anyway, but then I go, wait, no. It was Bumbaye. It makes more sense. I love that in the midst of all these strikes and lots of strikes and kicks, Aries still did the old ear clap to effect. I was like, old school. I really like this a lot, especially towards the end. See, the beginning of the match, you know, it's like, this is gonna be just lots of strikes and it bores me. But then what they did with it got me totally invested in it at the end, totally by the end. And as far as Aries goes, I don't think it's not that he's turning heel. He's pretty much been a heel since he got there, but it's not been defined because he arrives. He's immediately attacked by the Baron Corbin, who hates indie guys. So he has a little program of that. And also, when a guy with a name arrives, he's got goodwill, so the crowd wants to cheer him. But he's a guy who needs to be a heel. His nickname is the greatest man who ever lived. I mean, that's not a babyface nickname. And within the last weeks, he started wearing the silly cape again, which is a total heel cape. Baron Cicluna loves that cape. You know, and I think in the TV to come, we're going to see, you know, the full, you know, defined heel. But because he's been, you know, since day one there, he's been a total, like, cocky asshole. And this is going to be the nail in the coffin to say that he's a total bad guy, probably from the next TV here on in. And I thought the match was a fucking blast. And I thought Aries was... I thought he started a little slow, but once he found himself, I thought he was totally bringing it. Great match.
All right. Yeah, cool. Well, that brings us to our next match. And we didn't have a Bayley on the show tonight. Is Bayley injured or is she just not on the show?
She's not injured. She's injured in storyline.
She appeared in a backstage vignette.
Right.
On the pre-show, yeah.
I came over to shake Asuka's hand.
So, there we have it. We had Asuka versus Nia Jax. And Zelner, what did you think of the women's match tonight?
Well, compared to the Bayley-Nia Jax match from London. And I thought this one was better than that one. I think Asuka is better at this stage of her career, working an opponent like Nia Jax than Bayley was. She's had, you know, past experience working, you know, big girls in Japan, so she was very good here. Nia was okay in what she did. She was effective, and you need opponents like this as when you have babyface champions to, you know, get over the babyface, as far as like they can beat these big threats as well as the more competitive threats that's their size. I mean, that's wrestling's been built on that. You know, a smaller champion versus a bigger opponent. That's been a lot of that over the years. So I saw a lot of people complain, oh, this is, a waste. Nia Jax sucks. I mean, yeah, I mean, it is what it is, but you got to understand, you can't always have, you know, all, you know, work rate type matches.
It's just those people are dummies.
The thing about Bayley, I do think that they should have had Bayley come out on camera during this match. Maybe just sit in the crowd, showing the crowd or something. That's one thing I think this show was missing, was a Bayley appearance. This was the first takeover without Bayley in a long time. And it felt like there was it was missing her. So Asuka needed to win, of course. So they then again, another right finish for business. And we'll see what happens from here. But I thought Nia held her own in the match. And yeah, I mean, Asuka, heel opponents in the women's division, it's few and far between right now. So they're going to probably have to call somebody up. Well, I won't say call somebody up, but they're going to have to do something to do that. And Triple H did tease on his little Facebook deal after the show that there is a woman coming up that's going to make a huge impact on the division. So we'll see what happens at TV tomorrow night. So,
who do you think that is?
Well, the only one I can think of that they haven't called up yet. I know Athena worked a dark match tonight with her new name of Amber Moon, but she's a babyface more than a heel. Nikki Storm is there, so they could run with her. And her and Asuka would be interesting. So that may be who it is. So I can't think of anybody on the outside. I know that people are saying that they're all Velvet Sky, you know. I don't think so, but who knows? So we'll see, I guess, on the tapings tomorrow night.
Okay, cool. And finally, my man, Johnny P.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it was Chris that just was comparing. He was talking about a Bayley match with Nia Jax versus this one kind of briefly. Because it made me realize in that moment that while I did enjoy the experience of watching the Bayley match, a lot of it had to do with atmosphere, just that I liked the overall arching story. But I did watch it again and was like, oh, that's all it really is? Oh, okay. And this match wasn't amazing either, but it's probably true to say it was better in her role than Bayley in her role in that show in December. This had a really cool dynamic at first that just kind of died. And, you know, bringing up the Bayley match yet again, like, that had a decent dynamic that, like, kind of pulled its way through to me, but only because of the likability of Bayley. I don't know about Nia Jax. I'm sure she's a nice woman. I haven't heard anything horrible about her. But I really have to wonder if she wasn't The Rock's cousin, would she be here? I don't know why they're not pushing her to be, like, a really dangerous, like a woman from, I'm blanking on the names, like a Kong from Japan in the 90s. I don't know what really you do with her, because she's not aggressive or mean enough, or she's kind of playing a mean person. She seems like she's just too nice of a person in real life. So it wasn't horrible, but the dynamic, you know, the big beast versus strikes and agility, it died really quickly, and then it was just kind of a plodding match, and then it ended.
Well, you know what Nia Jax is, Johnny?
Yeah.
It's the same thing as Tamina. You know, it's the same type of vibe they got there, yeah. And of course, you know, there's so much comparisons with family and stuff. I mean, that's basically what they have. They have a bigger version of Tamina.
She's slightly more capable, though. Like, I mean, I think even slightly being mean. I mean, we've got to talk about incremental, like, scale here, because neither of them should be on a main roster. We're really on a
TV show. I'm talking about more a presentation.
Oh yeah, yeah.
More than work.
Yeah, because
Tamina's better working than Tamina.
Yeah, Tamina's not even. I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm a better worker than Tamina, and I've taken like two bumps in the ring in my life, and it hurt, and I was done with it. But she should be too. Yeah.
Hey, hold on. What do you mean you've taken two bumps?
Yeah, I've been in the wrestling ring before. Somebody tried to, a worker tried to show me how to bump. This is years ago. So did my filmmaking partner, Kev. Yeah. Yeah. His head really hurt. I just thought it hurt, but his head actually was bothering him for like 2 hours afterwards. He actually, he popped an aspirin, and I took him. He didn't know. I was like, by the way, that's how it starts in that business. As far as like painkiller addiction. The freaking ropes hurt to run. Like, that sucks. I'm amazed at these people, how, like, they're like, oh, yeah, your body gets kind of calloused up and you love bumping, and I'm just like, fuck that.
You know, back in my day, documentary filmmakers knew how to work, but, you know, that's by the way, were you just going to skip me on this match, Will?
Oh, Johnny, I am so sorry. Go for it. But I absolutely did skip you. I'm so sorry about that.
Oh, no, you're saying finally. I'm like, oh, nice. Here's the thing that I like about Naya's character is that she is the giant monster who's also glamorous. And I think that kind of speaks to some of the things you guys are talking about like, oh, I don't know. I like that. I like the fact that they're showing that this big, tall, giant, large girl is also pretty and doesn't have to have a mohawk or be or wear a bunch of leather and shit. She could be pretty too. And I dig that. I dig that's what they do with her. I thought this was Naya's best match that she's had on TV.
I agree.
Definitely. I watch every week, so it definitely was. And I love the bit she did where she's rubbing the paint off of Asuka's face. And I really dug that primal scream she let out before the final blow that knocked her out for the 1-2-3. Now, when they decide to turn her into a baby face monster, it'll work, but it'll be almost like an Andre situation where, like, hey, but one who gets pinned a lot like Big Show when he's a baby face. So I think they still got some stuff to do with Naya. I don't think she stinks whatsoever. And I think she's not going to the main roster anytime soon, I'd imagine. And as far as the comparisons with Tamina, I'm like, she's a 100 times better than fucking Tamina, who I like in her role as an enforcer type character. But as far as like working in the ring, you know, God, Nia Jax is tons better.
Okay, so we made sure we got both Johnnies in on that one.
Yes. Oh, and I also need to mention Tom Phillips' leather red sports coat. It is. Where do you buy one of those? I've never seen a leather sports coat.
You better be careful. You talk about Tom Phillips, you'll get fired.
From what, this?
Uh-oh.
That's what ask the other WWE announcer, the NXT announcers.
Well, he's good.
Maybe you rated a Lover Boy's wardrobe or something from like the Loving Every Minute video. I don't know.
But I know, but it was like a nice tailored sports jacket that just happens to be red and leather. I've never seen that in my life.
All right, let's move on to the main event. This one is in a steel cage. Another rematch from the Dallas Takeover, but this one's in a cage, and it's NXT champion Samoa Joe versus Finn Balor. And on this one, Johnny P, I want you to tell us what you thought of this match, and if you want to compare it to the Dallas match that had the blood stoppage.
Yeah, this opening release is the 3 for me. I feel like I should probably rewatch this one because I always end up liking the Joe-Finn Balor matches upon second watch even more. But there's nothing wrong with it. It was solid. Nothing ever sucks on these NXT shows. I've been on pretty much every one of the reaction shows, and I don't remember the panel ever just going, well, this match completely blowed. The worst match tonight was still like an average match, which had some highlights. I think this feud's over, I hope, just because they've essentially been feuding since late November into December for that first show in London. It was, again, it was the least of them. I don't know. I just think I don't like WWE cage matches. Maybe that's a big part of it. It's just, I think it's, I will say that I like the way it descended. Did you guys check that out? The way the cage now descends from the ceiling, it like shoots out and then comes together. There didn't seem to be like amazing flow to this. They worked okay together, but there was nothing that kind of like held it through for me. And again, maybe that's just the guys trying to like run away from each other to win. It's fucking stupid. And I don't like the pausing for big spots from like the top of the cage and stuff like that. I do think the finish was really cool. It's just that it kind of takes a little too much time to develop for me. That's why I don't like gimmick matches that involve like setups with tables and stuff. So that's my thought on it.
All right, Johnny Sorrow.
Well, right before the match, we had a little bit with Regal being interviewed, and Bobby Roode made his debut very just walking behind Regal, and he goes into a meeting, and they come back, and the announcer's like, "Oh my God, it's Bobby Roode." I was like, "Oh, the people who are bitching about just other TNA guys coming in are just probably having a field day right now." But as far as the match goes, I everyone knows I'm the biggest Samoa Joe fan on the goddamn planet. So when he slams the door behind him coming in, I was like, escape the cage rules. But what I did like is in the beginning of this match where Joe was trying to make sure all the action was near the door, I was like, oh, you know, if playing within the rules of this match, that's really smart working. You know, like, just keep it over there. And as it descended, you know, of course, we just want to beat the fuck out of each other. And they sort of got away from the whole escape the cage thing because they've added in submissions and pinfalls count as well. Like the classic WWF cage match didn't have that. You know, so as long as you have that in the ring with a referee in the ring, I'm willing to go, okay. You know, but I've never been a fan myself. But beyond that, I'm prejudiced. I love Joe, and I thought Balor did a great job, and I just totally found myself immersed in this match. I was really kind of thinking, I'm like, Joe's going to lose. Like, Joe's reign is just a prop in the story of Balor here, and this is a redemption story. And when it got to the finish, and because I could think, Balor's just going to the top to look around and jump, and Joe will catch him and win. And then that, when that wasn't happening, and Joe just gets him on the top in Muscle Buster, I was like, oh no, this match is over, and Joe is winning, and sure shit he does. And I love the way that, you know, they were selling that Balor was like super fucking injured. Joe is walking over, and I was praying, I'm like, don't fucking shake his hand. Don't you fucking shake his hand. And he gives him like a glimmer of respect and then walks away with his fucking belt. And I just was marking out for Joe. So I loved it. But like I said, I can't call it a Joe match fairly. He's my man.
Yeah. What about?
Hey, did you say? I'm sorry. Hold on. Sorry, did you say that you're prejudiced for Joe instead of biased for Joe? Because I want you to explain what that means.
A prejudice that I hate everyone who faces Samoa Joe.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm on the same team as you. All right. I just wanted to tease you and make sure.
I'm like Archie Bunker for Joe. Yeah. Jay Zenith, no one's going to be always the best.
Okay, now, Johnny P., I don't want to lose control of the show, so you can't interrupt me, okay? Because I have to keep control of the show.
I know I'm encouraging Johnny Sorrow, which is your biggest fear, but go on.
Oh, that time in the hotel room when you interrupted him, it was crazy.
Oh, my God. All right, anyway, Chris.
Will, I don't think you have to explain the control thing anymore because that dude got banned. So, you know, I don't think you'll be hearing about that anymore in the reaction threads. Regarding this match, these two have been feuding for, seem like forever. the matches have all been good to really good, but nothing blow away. And this one is one of the lesser ones they've had. I think the cage was the hindrance. I think this match would have been better if it was like a TLC type match or something like that. I think the cage works against Finn Balor. So that was a problem there. Of course, they did way too many spots, you know, trying to get out of the cage, which, you know, I hate the escape stuff too. So, I mean, really, I mean, you just need to win by pin or submission or whatever. The crowd on this one was interesting. And it says a lot because really this feud's been like that in a way too, is the crowd heat has not been as strong for this or as any of the other matches on this show. And this is the main event feud, you know, slotted that way, but it's just, it's not dynamic. It's not, you know, reaching out. And that may be, playing towards Finn's weaknesses in his character. And of course, Joe is really good as a heel, but he needs somebody more dynamic to play off of himself. To accentuate his character. The finish made perfect sense because obviously Finn's going up. I mean, it's got to happen. This was definitive. He is wearing the black and white tonight, colors of the club, so he's got to be going up eventually with the club so they can do their deal there. So, I mean, Joe had to win. Joe is now definitive champion. Again, we'll see what happens down the road for the next challenger. But I thought the ending was anticlimactic. I mean, it was what it was, but normally these takeover shows end on either a very positive note or they end with like a surprise type deal, like the Owen Zayn deal. There's always, it seems like the ending for takeover always is a good ending. And this one just came off as flat. It wasn't like the normal endings in the, you know, from reading people where people were saying is they were like, well, is that it? I mean, well, nothing else is going to happen now. You know, it just kind of felt interesting and different. And I would have thought that maybe they would tease the next challenger or have something come out. But with this whole draft deal, who knows who's going to be in NXT anymore? And Triple H on the conference, well, not conference, but the Facebook interview after the show, explained the title of the show. He said that this is the end of NXT as developmental, as now NXT is now its own brand. So that's what that meant. So what does that mean, you know, in the long run, for some of these, for the talent? And will NXT be co-branded with SmackDown? Or how is that going to work? There are rumors going around today that USA wants a third hour. Will that hour be NXT with SmackDown on Tuesdays? Who knows? But yeah, I think NXT as we know it, this was the end, I think, of what we know as the NXT that we've had for the last couple of years. So it's going to be interesting where they go.
I don't know if I'm excited about that.
I think if you look at the opening promo, they were showing all these people that have moved on, and they moved into all the young people who are still there. So that's where I got the whole it's the end of the beginning was that what the logo said. So yeah, it's not just, this isn't just your beginning, it's a separate brand, but I think it's still going to be its own thing with, you know, all the guys we dig, everything. As far as
it's going to be its own thing, but it's going to be
different. As far as that finish goes, Chris, you say, like, again, to me, Samoa Joe holding the fucking belt up in the air, like, that's the best ending I can possibly imagine to a show.
Well, that's you. I mean, but still, no, normally NXT ends with something
Nakamura to come out and confront.
I mean, they're basically crickets going in the arena.
People, then I don't give a shit about them.
Well, actually, that's
you kind of need to have a, you kind of need to end good
because we've seen like bigger places for these takeover shows, like you know, and they did it at Full Sail, right? Yeah. Yeah. So, like, doesn't that feel like a step back? Like, going back to Full Sail for this special when they could have done, like, a 3,000 seat?
You know what, dude? I think it's sort of the same thing. Johnny P might appreciate this. It's like going back to Philly for an ECW thing. That's their core audience. They want to keep rewarding their core audience.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I didn't even question it because I guess I do think that way. And they've kind of put it, they've kind of positioned it that way. Well, I mean, they did what, almost 15,000 in Brooklyn for that for the Sasha Bailey match. The rematch, the 30-minute match, is back at Full Sail in October. This isn't like, I guess it's also that it's not a new thing to me. So they've done this before.
Yeah, and the Full Sail people, you know, the fans and the whole area was upset. They get upset every time I take up's not there. So there's that too. It's gonna be interesting. Again, it's gonna be interesting how everything goes. Will they create another name for a developmental group? If NXT is now its own brand and its own function, and Triple H has fully come out and said this, no longer developmental, do they create a developmental group?
Well, they already has a name. It's called Evolve.
Well,
it's very stylized, though. I get the joke, but yeah, I think
this is the same Evolve that's using TNA talent.
Oh, and Cody Rhodes.
So, and Cody Rhodes in the future too, but
I want to go on record to say this is one step beyond for me. Like, if it's just like, oh, this is its own brand, and now you've got to like remake something for developmental, they have this neat thing that they're trying to overextend in my mind. That just keep it where it was. The last year and a half, 2 years have been amazing. You don't need to expand that much with it. You're already doing something with the brand split with SmackDown and Raw. It's a little risky. I just think that this is a little bit over the top.
And the people, the main creative people behind NXT are basically all, or the people behind SmackDown right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's changing. And there's a new writer for NXT. I can't remember the guy's name. He was in The Observer a few weeks ago. And he's the guy that's, you know, answering directly to Triple H now. But...
Hold on, Chris.
It's your time.
Chris, do you think this is like one of those things where Vince McMahon wants to kind of take back his puppy? You know, we'll let Triple H say it's his baby, but this thing's getting big. Well, we need these guys for SmackDown. And then he just kind of...
I don't know if that's the case. I think it's Triple H wanting to do his own thing as a bigger scale deal. More anything else.
Because I think NXT right now has a very cool factor to it, a very positive image, whereas SmackDown is still seen, like, just the name SmackDown, it's a relic from another era.
Yeah, and they're going to do the whole draft thing, you know, and they're going to, USA's and going live.
Even the whole draft thing feels like a relic from another era. You know,
yeah,
it just feels like we've been down that road before.
Have they announced the draft, though? On Raw, they were just like, we don't know what we're doing yet. So,
well, they've mentioned breaking up tag teams.
They're going to do some type of dispersal. The New Day mentioned that, but Shane and Steph were just like, we don't know what's going on. So they haven't said that on, they haven't said the words draft on TV yet. Outside of the New Day going, you can't split us up. No,
they haven't. They may not said outright, but I mean, if you read The Observer, the plans are in place for right now Reigns to be the lead guy on one and Cena to be the lead guy on the other.
I'm talking about that, watching the old shows where you'd sit there and watch the thing roll around like a slot machine to see who goes to where. They haven't like indicated that anything like that's going to happen. But real quick, with the NXT thing, I think it's typical wrestling. These NXT shows are selling out in like a half an hour, left and right. And wrestling is wrestling. It's something that's hot. People, promoters, jump on it and, ride that horse until it dies. I just think that is just what wrestling does. And that's what we're seeing here, as far as them changing it or making it bigger or what have you. Well, that's what that is.
Well, we'll see, man, because I know me and Chris have had this argument, and Meltzer kind of confirmed it this past week on his radio show. Whereas I look at the indicators, I know we argue about ratings a lot, and the ratings are down, right? I think they rebounded a little bit this week. But Meltzer also mentioned that house show attendance has been down, too, since January. Ever since Cena got injured, house show attendance has been down. So I mean, if they're going to be successful with this, you know, I think they got to do something radically different. You know, they have to rethink what it is they want from their product. If that they just want to play it safe, I don't think any of this is going to work.
Well,
I think they're going to have to do something bold and radically different and courageous. Would be
the TV. The TV has been noticeably better for the last month or so. I know it hasn't translated into ratings yet, but just from a viewer point, I'm like, the TV's gotten a lot better. So,
well, let me ask you this. Like, Johnny, I know you watch it on Hulu. Johnny, yes. P, I don't think you watch any of the TV, right? On a regular basis? Johnny P?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking to Johnny. Because I don't.
I was, but then I said, Johnny, I said, do you even watch Raw at all?
Not post-Mania, really. I've seen pieces of it. I try to DVR it here and there, but honestly, life's busy. It's not that engaging me.
Yeah, and Zellner, I know
you watch it. There's so much indie stuff I want to watch.
Right. Zellner, I know you watch it pretty religiously, but can you handle, like, I know they said the rumor is USA wants a third hour for SmackDown. I mean, I know I couldn't take 6 hours of their TV a week. You know, wrestling, maybe, yeah. Just not WWE-produced, sanitized wrestling. Like, I couldn't take that every week. What about you guys? I mean, just putting it out there.
Well, I'm just saying, SmackDown hasn't even gone live yet on Tuesdays. They already want 3 hours?
Yeah.
Well, that was a report that came out today. Meltzer come out and said that that's not true.
Okay, thank God.
But they want to debut a new show after SmackDown. And then that's when stuff come out saying that maybe that new show is NXT.
Mm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I don't know. I'm kind of looking forward to the brand split because I like the idea of, well, if the guys I like are wrestling on one show, then I don't have to waste my time with the other show. Especially like in the mid-2000s when I watched SmackDown, but I didn't, you know, turn to Raw at all. You know?
Well, the plans from what I've heard is they're going to do completely opposite of what they did in that era. They don't want to make one show one way and one show the other way. They want to have pretty much a variety on both shows where you don't have a whole lot of your quote unquote work rate guys on one show and have, you know, your other guys on the other show. So
I don't even need work rate guys so much.
They may both be the type of same. Because
you got to remember, Ben Wall was on Raw forever. He was a work rate guy while Eddie and those guys were on SmackDown. Just to me, I just want to see unique shows. I don't want, you know, Raw Redux Part 2, but just with different guys on the other show, you know. Anyone else want to chime in on this, or y'all are good?
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, everything is fluid right now. So,
well, let's hope, like I said, let's hope that they do something courageous and that they actually try something different and exciting and not the same old product. But well, speaking of this show, now for my taste, I like the show. I enjoyed it. I don't know, guys. I mean, and this isn't me being grumpy old jaded Will. This is really. It didn't feel as special as like other NXT shows. I enjoyed the wrestling. I enjoyed the show. NXT takeovers are always easy to watch. To me, this one just didn't feel like super special. I don't know. That's kind of my vibe. Chris, what about you?
I agree. I mean, this was one of the lesser TakeOver specials. It was still a good show with some really, really good matches. And the tag match was awesome. Tag match was one of the best matches they've ever had on NXT specials. But it just, again, it happens when your main event is maybe your third or fourth best match on the show. And doesn't come off as like a big deal. You know, so it's not, and Bayley not being on the show, again, that's a huge void. Huge void, because Asuka is really good, but she's not Bayley. Bayley is a, you know, transcendent.
For that crowd, anyway.
But I think
Asuka can't be transcendent.
Okay, but to that point, I think having Bayley coming out, everything, because of how she's the heart and soul of NXT and is the biggest thing, would overshadow Asuka. So you need to pull her back. Bayley sitting at ringside would garner more attention than the people in the ring.
Oh yeah, because when they showed her, that crowd immediately started singing.
Totally.
So it would have, but they could have brought her out at the end of the match. That's, you know, there's ways you could do it to have her at least make an appearance.
Well, maybe her and Mojo were on a hot date. Come on.
Oh, come on. Now, Johnny Sauer, thumbs up.
Oh, definitely thumbs up show. I get what you're saying about not feeling as special, but I think it's one of those things where these things have been going on now for a while. Not everyone is going to feel... The last one was fucking, you know, right before WrestleMania, for fuck's sakes. They're not all going to feel super special. But you give me a two-hour show like this, with that tag match... And for me, the main event, and Asuka, Nia, please, give more of this and make it, you know, this doesn't feel special with all these great matches that I've enjoyed for 2 hours. So,
I'm not saying that it wasn't I gave it a thumbs up. I'm just saying other shows felt special.
Oh, I know. Well, not every Clash of the Champions felt special. That's what I
call it. Oh, yes. Okay, well, that's a good
point. Clash of the Champions, there are a lot of shitty ones.
Right. But because these are on Wednesday nights, I immediately flashed, this feels like watching Clash of the Champions.
All right. Johnny P.
Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Yeah.
Yeah, thumbs up, but I have the same hesitation that you have. Ever's right, they're not all going to be amazing, but like Chris said, you were kind of waiting for a... I don't know why they didn't send Knock out there at the end or something. I'm really hopeful of something neat coming out of the tapings tomorrow. But if things are about to change with all of WWE and therefore NXT, I hope we can squeeze them out the rest of the summer to get us to another magical Brooklyn takeover, because that show last year was just the coolest. So, hesitant, thumbs up, but hesitant about the future. And if it is the end of a really cool period for NXT, I hope that we get like an awesome thing in Brooklyn before it changes.
Right.
Oh, okay. So hold on. Battle between the Texas and the New York area. What's better? Dallas takeover or Brooklyn?
Oh, Dallas.
Oh, yeah, probably Dallas, honestly. And I really liked Brooklyn, but we were going insane watching that thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I thought Balor Joe was awesome, even with the blood. The doctor's trying to stop the blood.
I was just trying to stoke the fires of regional, you know, arguments.
I'm not a New York guy, John. I'm a Philly guy, so.
Well, but we're Northeast guys, you know.
Yes, we are Northeast guys. We wear that patch.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
You can tell me how I jaywalked and I thought you were all a-holes, Will.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You,
Johnny, they stop when no cars are coming because the light tells them to. I can't believe it. Ugh. Yeah, I know.
Says, follow the law.
Oh, no.
Anyway, all right, guys, I want to thank you all for being on the show. We got Money in the Bank in a couple of weeks, and we'll talk to you all then. For everyone who's listening, thanks for listening to Place to Be Nation. Bye-bye. All right, cool. You got it, Chris?